Grab your oversized pants and undersized necklaces. We're going back to the 90s with the movie that launched a thousand Hot Topic locations. It's The Craft, and it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
My name's Sean Collier. This is the number one movie in America, Listener's Choice Edition. And I'm joined here by two people who switched bodies, but, you know, are coping with it okay. It's Camila Adams.
Hi, I'm Robin.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Hi, I'm Camila.
I mean, I feel like you two could pull it off. Like there'd be a little bit of
just the fact that you have a cat, Robin.
I don't know. I'm mostly worried about your daughter.
Yeah.
Robin's like holding her like at arm's length. Oh, no. Just like, what do I do with it? And would I be allergic to your cat in your body, or is it just in my body that I would be allergic to cats?
This is an amazing philosophical question.
Freaky, yeah. Another one where I don't know how many people saw it. I saw a couple of people on Twitter and Facebook renting it or finding it places when we dropped the episode. But for the most part, people who had seen it were like, I didn't think I'd like this one. And then I did. Yay.
Yeah,
it's pretty much a pleasant movie.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, I'll go ahead and, all right, not so bad. Maybe that's just the trick. You just go in with really low expectations about everything.
I mean, we didn't get into this, but this is, and I saw this at a drive-in. So, I mean, when I first saw it, I did see it at a theater, but this Freaky makes me miss a certain kind of theater. Freaky makes me miss a small, unimpressive theater that I went to at the last minute on like a Thursday night for the 10 p.m. show. Right. That man, Freaky would be good there.
Yeah. Or like, you know, you're on vacation or just in a different city and you're just like, I'm just looking to kill a few hours and I'll go slide in here. And there it
What's
is.
What's playing now? Watch. Yeah. I miss that.
Yeah. I've only ever barely been burned like once or twice maybe with that. I think the one thing that I did say, it's not really a burn, but it's something I would have never watched is that Pop Star, I think it was, with Adam.
Never Stop.
Yes.
I like that movie.
I mean, it wasn't bad, but it was just like, I would have never purposefully seen it if it wasn't like just we're here.
That was in my top 10 that year. I love that movie.
I saw like a DreamWorks animated movie with Brad Pitt, I think called Sinbad, under that premise, because we drove like half an hour to the movie theater and that was what was playing. And it was like, all right, that's what we're watching.
I might go to the movies this week. I don't know.
Excited.
I'm fully vaccinated. And this was the first time that there was a CDC thing that said, are you vaccinated? You can go to the movies. Like, it's on the list.
Oh, wow.
I figure I'll make it about 10 days from full vaccination before I'm like, you know what? Here we go.
Right.
It's going to depend on finding a thing I want to see, which is not a guarantee. But
really,
it's a weird time at the cinema.
You won't just go ahead and just take whatever just for the experience? Or you think that will just like muddy the experience if it's a terrible movie?
Yeah, I say that now, but I think we all know that when it comes down to it, it'll be like, the Truffle Hunters? Okay. This anime that is somehow the number one movie in America this week. Sure, why the hell not?
Right.
That's real, by the way, and I don't have the name of it. Demon Hunter? Demon Slayer? Something with Demons is the number one movie in America. Narrowly beat the second weekend of Mortal Kombat. It's a gigantic global hit. It has already become the number one movie of all time in Japan. It's an R-rated anime, and now it's on the list. So that's something. Good for something becoming a nomia that would not have otherwise.
But Camila's face, once again. The subtitle of this podcast is, I wish you could see Camila's face.
A memoir.
I just start doing this on doing this on Twitch or something, just, you know. To put a bow on Freaky, Freaky ends up pretty high on our list. It's 22nd overall at 72 2/3, just below The Lego Movie, just above The Town. I noticed this time, Freaky is 6th place among movies from the 21st century. We don't give them high scores. Usually when we run into something from the past 2 decades, we are lukewarm to utterly hateful.
Huh. I have thoughts about that, but I'm going to save them for when we rate this movie.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. 6th place, Ocean's 11 is our top rated, and even that's from 2001. Then Toy Story 4, 22 Jump Street, School of Rock, The Lego Movie, and Freaky, 6th place overall. Meanwhile, 11 of our bottom 15 are from the 21st century. So Robin has thoughts for later.
Yeah.
7 is still 7th. But more importantly, as discussed on the last episode, there was a neck-and-neck race in the most recent fan vote between Titanic and The Craft. And in the end, I don't want to say the goths beat the normal teens, but that's basically what happened. You know, we were all about that age around that time, and some of us went one way and some of us went the other. And we know where our fan base went.
Wow, was Titanic was 96 too?
97.
Wow.
Yeah. This was not the first time I had seen The Craft, but the first time I saw The Craft was last October. So this is relatively new to me. Just happened to not land on it in high school. I easily could have, and it just never quite happened. Camila, where were you coming in?
Oh, geez, Louise. This is probably like my 100th viewing of The Craft. I saw The Craft in the theater when it came out. Mm-hmm. And so it's always been on my radar as a favorite of mine. Yeah, I wasn't necessarily a goth at this time when this came out, but there was always that little witchy behavior type of just lying there underneath, waiting to pop its head out. And also, when I was doing the Hecklevision at Hollywood Theater, I showed The Craft with, frankly, Scarlett as our guest.
Yes. Yeah.
But not Robin, because
I went and looked at my joke list because I didn't realize that was at the Hollywood Theater because I was in South Africa, right. And I wrote jokes for that show. Nice. And then when I looked at the email, I was like, Hollywood Theater, was Camila there?
Yes, I was behind the whole thing. That was my event.
Oh, our history.
Yeah, I know, right? It could have begun so much sooner.
If only I were in the right country.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, you know, don't expect too much bad mouth on The Craft for me. Too much. And that it's not there.
And Robin, I'm eager to hear your history. You are perhaps the ideal age to have had your fashion sense affected by this movie.
And it absolutely was. I was 12 when this movie came out. Oh, and yeah. I was exactly the kind of impressionable young girl who they were trying to protect from this movie. I was obsessed with it before I even saw it because it's rated R, right?
I think so.
I just know that at the time we couldn't, me and my friends wanted to see this and we couldn't get anyone to take us. And because like their parents were all Catholic and my parents were lazy. So like I remember us renting this when it came out on video and like we had a sleepover party and like watched it. I think back to back. Like, oh, wow. We were just like, now is the time. Now is the hour. And yeah, I totally cast spells after watching this movie. And like, Colin and I were watching that episode of Pen 15 where they start doing witchcraft. And I was like,
oh, yeah.
It's like, what is this about? And I was like, every teenage girl is a witch at some point, yeah. Every single one. And I was actually going to ask you, Camila, because I know you're afraid of devil stuff, if you were able to bypass that part of teen girl dumb because of that.
Actually, it was probably, well, this movie came out, I was like, probably 19 or 20. So right. I was outside of that.
Less impressionable.
I wouldn't say that, but if I was like 13 when this came out, I would have probably never seen it until I wouldn't have been allowed to have watched it until like I was. So as my teen years, no, that I had never even touched anything about Wicca or witchcraft or anything like that. It wasn't until after adulthood, like after basically I moved out of my mom's house until I started to actually like really look into the history of Wiccan culture and behaviors. And So I don't, just like, you know, What's-Her-Face says in the movie, you know, it's like, I don't believe that witchcraft is of the devil. I do believe that it's more of a nature situation. And it's like, I have a whole, like, other thing. That's a whole nother podcast about my personal experience and thoughts on Wiccan lifestyle is. But suffice it to say, like, no, like, I never thought of it as a problem. Like, I don't automatically associate witchcraft with the devil.
Good.
And yet, that's why it's R-rated. What I read, which might have been IMDb trivia, so grain of salt, but they did everything to keep this in the PG-13 realm. There's not a lot of language, there's no blood, there's no nudity, and they got an R for teens doing witchcraft. They were specifically like, this is morally questionable R.
That's crazy. Say
thematic elements, like there are two attempted rapes in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And plenty of magic murders.
Magic murder.
I never thought I would find myself thinking, poor Skeet Ulrich. Like, he's not an actor who lends himself to characters you feel bad for, and yet here we are.
I definitely did not feel bad for him for one second. He got everything he deserved and more.
Well, let's first get into, if there is anyone out there who hasn't seen The Craft, it's like 90 minutes, whatever. Stop, hit pause, go watch it and come back. But
Right, it's free on HBO right now.
Failing that, here is very qualified recapper Robin Hitchcock with the plot of this film in 60 seconds. And go.
Verusa Balk's Nancy, Nev Campbell's Bonnie, and Rachel True's Rochelle are teen witches looking for their fourth so they can call the corners and advance their powers. Fortunately, natural witch Sarah, played by Robin Tunney in her bad post-Empire Records wig, just arrived in town. Sarah's willpower magic lets them levitate Rochelle, swap an even worse wig, and vehicular homicide a street harasser. As they study magic, they direct their powers more precisely against their particular grievances. Rochelle makes racist bully Christine Taylor lose her hair. Bonnie turns her burn scars into Elmer's glue. Nancy makes her abusive stepdad have a heart attack, and Sarah makes Skeet Ulrich fall in love with her. They call the corners and invoke Menaw and become even more powerful and drastically more bitchy. Sarah questions if they're going too far, and they mean girl her. Nancy kills Skeet, the mean girl, and kicks it up a notch with a truly absurd amount of stakes and insects. They try to kill Sarah, but her magic is stronger. Rochelle and Bonnie apologize. She sends them away with anger wind, and Nancy hallucinates in her straitjacket.
Excellent. 53 seconds with a bonus for overcoming the sound of peanut barking in the background. Could you hear that too clearly?
Yeah. No, I was really deeply in it.
That was good. Right. That was informative. That gives you everything you need to know under 60 seconds. Well done.
And I even put in a couple jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Peanut, whatever they're doing out there, they're allowed to do it. It
doesn't involve you. Stay out of grown folks' business.
Yeah, that certainly covers it. Let me get this out of the way, because mostly this should be a praise of The Craft episode. Is it me, or is the rift between them a little thin? Like, four people with perfect love, and then there's a little bit of tension between Robin and Firuza, and then they're literally not talking to her.
Like, that's teenage girls.
My main criticism of this movie is that they turn so dramatically against her.
Right.
And then, like Camila said, I remember my own teen experience.
Bro, like you could miss a day of school and come back and everybody hates you. Like, all you did was miss a day, like, for no, so.
I feel like they could have grappled with that a little bit better. I also think that the sequel, flipping it and making it like the power of friendship prevailing, I really liked that change, even though I think, like, you know, at the end of the day, the sequel is pretty forgettable. Like, I kind of wish that this movie were more positive about womanhood.
True.
But it's really about teen girlhood, which is very hard to be positive about. It sucks being a teenage girl.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you're right though. Like, it doesn't take much for Bonnie and, Rochelle to just, like, flip on her. But it's also like that whole, well, she's the new girl and Nancy's the alpha here, and Nancy's also the fucking crazy one. But the only thing that I was really questioning was just, like, I feel like they wouldn't be on board for this murder. Like, I think the murder might be just too much for them.
But it's Skeet Ulrich.
No, not them. When they were trying to convince Robin Tooney to kill herself.
Oh, yes. Okay, yeah, no, Skeet. Yeah, and I kind of feel like I glossed over at the end that they try to frame Robin Tunney for Skeet Ulrich's murder and make it look like she killed herself. And she had survived a previous suicide attempt. And they also convince her that her dad and her stepmother have died in a plane crash. It's terrible.
Right.
The snakes take they take the spotlight, but there's a lot of horrible stuff happening there.
Let me be very much a straight man watching this movie for just a minute, because I want to, there's another thing I want to segment. And when I'm looking at this, I feel like there should be a progression of which of these four you're most into, depending on where you are in life. Like, I'm thinking back and I'm like, okay, teen boy Sean goes straight for Nev Campbell because
Scream Queen.
Right. Scream Queen. 20s goes to Firuza because, like, the excitement of, like, hot and also a little, like, woo, wild, right? And now I'm in my 30s and I'm like, well, obviously Rachel True, right? Like, from of these four, it's so clear that it's
so
her.
Pretty.
And she still looks the same.
I know. So I mean, she was 30 in this movie, so like,
right, she's like 75 now.
But like, she's in her mid 50s and she's still a great Twitter follow, by the way. If you don't follow, she's hilarious on Twitter. Highly recommend.
I did get a chance to chat with her at Steel City Con last year, maybe probably right before everything went to hell. But yeah, she's a delight in person.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Well, let me tell you about it, and then we can dive in a little bit more. The Craft was released May 3rd of 1996, the 11th number one of that year, winning its opening weekend with $6.7 million. Three other new releases that did not come close. The Great White Hype was in fifth. The Last Dance, I looked that up, and I still don't know what it is. It was in sixth. And The Pallbearer, again, had never heard of that. It's a rom-com with Gwyneth and David Schwimmer.
Oh, I saw that one in the theater.
I remember that.
It was a ninth place finish. And boy, was this a one-weekend winner only, because the next week, Twister was released, earned $41 million. The Craft actually fell to third with 3.6. Behind The Truth About Cats and Dogs,
Woo-hoo!
Which was never a number one. It was just
love
second for a while.
It's just always...
Do people like that?
I love that movie. It's terrible, but I love it.
Girls our age love that movie.
Yes.
Okay.
Women our age.
Yes.
I see that title and I think of Must Love Dogs, which is not good.
Yeah, not so much. I tried to watch it the other night. Like, I owned it on DVD and I was like, do I own this digitally? And I did not. So I did not watch it because I didn't want to get up and go find the DVD.
The classic struggle. Do I crack open this case?
Right.
Or do I scroll Netflix for 25 minutes?
Right.
The Craft did not make a lot of money. It stuck around in the top 10 for 5 weeks, earning a total of $24.8 million. 66th place overall for that year. But hey, that's one ahead of Fargo. So. Congratulations. There were a total of 85 different screen tests for the four main roles, including Angelina Jolie and Alicia Silverstone, who were not selected. Rachel True and Firuza Balk were cast first. The other two were more of a challenge to cast.
I couldn't imagine Alicia Silverstone in any of the roles. Her facial tics are too distracting.
I think they were both up for Robin's part.
There's no way Angelina Jolie would have. Like, she's too disarming.
Come on, she is a Nancy.
Right, yeah, absolutely. Right.
She won an Oscar for playing Nancy in a different movie.
Right.
The Craft is an MTV Movie Award winner.
Clearly.
As Robin Tunney and Firuza Balk won Best Fight at the 1997 ceremony. Please, I want to wake up to this nominee clip reel every day, because it won over Matthew Broderick and Jim Carrey in The Cable Guy. Jim Brown and Martians in Mars Attacks, Jackie Chan and, quote, henchman in Jackie Chan's First Strike, and Pam Anderson and, quote, bad guy in Barbed Wire.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah.
It's all very generic.
Bad guy.
Was that the first year that they had that category or something? Because it sounds like that they were just, like, scraping the bottom of the barrel.
No, I think they just wanted to get Pam Anderson and Jackie Chan in there. It was a big moment for those two, who I bet have never met. because I cannot get enough of 90s MTV Movie Award results, let's stay here for a minute. Best Movie was won by Scream over Independence Day, Jerry Maguire, The Rock, and Romeo and Juliet.
Obviously.
Romeo plus Juliet.
Solid winner.
Yeah.
Yeah. The big one, best actor and actress were obvious. I think it was Tom Cruise and... somebody from one, and Claire Danes for Romeo plus Juliet, and Tom Cruise for Jerry Maguire. The big one, this category, breakthrough performance of 1996, Ewan McGregor for Trainspotting, Vivica A. Fox for Independence Day, Renee Zellweger for Jerry Maguire, Courtney Love for The People versus Larry Flint, and your winner, Matthew McConaughey for A Time to Kill.
All right, all right, all right.
Oh. What a time. Lifetime Achievement Award went to Chewbacca that year, and he had a lot of work ahead.
Oddly enough, this is just a random tandem thought. Speaking of MTV awards, to this day, like, you guys know the song Last Goodbye by Jeff Buckley?
Yes.
Okay, so they used it on one of those clips for an MTV award for Interview with the Vampire. And to this day, I still associate that song with Interview with the Vampire. It's played nowhere near or around the movie whatsoever, but I still see it.
I thought that. I was like, if someone slipped me a DVD of that MTV Movie Award ceremony, would it end the rest of my night? And I'm like, yeah, I think it would. I think that would.
I think any 90s MTV Movie Award ceremony, I will absolutely watch it right now.
Oh, for sure.
Was that the one where they gave Wes Anderson a, like, we're interested in you award? Because that changed my life.
I think that's,
I was like, I need to see this bottle rocket film.
Let's talk about The Craft Legacy, a real movie that came out last year. It's a shame. The much-delayed sequel was scheduled for a theatrical release, but absolutely dumped to video on demand, not to a streaming service, and it's not even one of the, like, big video on demand movies of last year. It really felt like it snuck out on October 28th, 2020. It had a small worldwide release. It made less than $4 million in the few other markets where it did get theatrical. Not only was it VOD here, it had no theatrical release whatsoever. It didn't play drive-ins or anything.
Oh, damn.
It's a shame because while it was not a great movie, like, it was, did we all see it? It was fine.
I didn't see it.
It's on Stars if anybody wants to watch it, and it is worth watching for free.
Yeah, that's where I was standing on. I was like, I'm not paying for this.
Yeah.
I mean, should we spoil the one spoilable thing?
No.
No.
But yeah.
Because I will eventually watch it.
Yeah, just watch it. Honestly, I think it might even be worth $2.
Oh, well, look at that. You brought up the price. Do I hear three? Is it worth $3?
Especially during spooky season. Like, it's, yeah. I think I am happy I watched it. I even put it on again last night after watching this. I immediately lost interest and moved on to other things. But
yeah, my plan I was going to watch it after I finished the first one, but then I forgot about it. Like, I saw it when I was looking for it, and I was like, oh, yeah, I'll watch it after. Credits roll, and I'm like, oh, that was great. Move on.
The main four are great. I like them. I like the cast a lot. And David Duchovny in his, I'm droopy, but you still would, face. I'm not trying to bask in the joke that much, but I know how the audio lines up. Camila's laugh would needed space to breathe there. There is the one unfortunate note here. There's a long history of Rachel True being excluded from the film's marketing. There was a lot at the time.
Girl.
This came up again recently when a release of the film, it may have been digital, it may have been the way the poster displayed on something that The Craft was streaming on, was just cropped to the other three of them, and there was another flap that she started on Twitter, very rightfully so. But this isn't new. In fact, she was the only one of the four main characters not invited to those MTV Movie Awards. It is unsurprising, but nevertheless
still
sad.
Yeah,
she was also still talking about how there were a lot of cons that weren't inviting her. They're inviting the other three for, like, you know, oh, it's a Craft reunion, but like billing it as a Craft reunion, but not inviting Rachel. Which, how the fuck? How dare
Seriously.
You?
Seriously.
How dare you?
I hate to disparage a Robin, but how is that possible when I don't have it in me to care about Robin Tunney?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Who is like, get her to my convention. Like, what?
Right,
why?
Yeah. Exactly. You're right. Like, she's the last one I think of. When I think of The Craft, it's Firuza, Nev, and Rachel. And then it's like, oh, yeah, and that other chick.
And the main character.
Right.
But here, let me bring it back up. The store they visit repeatedly is a real place. That is Panpipe's Magical Marketplace in California.
Oh, and didn't Firuza Balk buy it?
As soon as filming ended, Firouza bought it herself. Wow. And owned it for 5 years. She sold it in 2001, but it's still open. You could walk in there today.
Wow. Okay. What's it called again? Because that's a fun name.
Panpipe's Magical Marketplace. magical with the K that doesn't have to be there.
Nice, nice.
Magical.
Yeah. And finally, I'm reading a full IMDb trivia fact because I couldn't summarize this, but it needed to be said. An official website of the film claimed, "The crew had to return to the location a second time to complete filming, interrupted by several weird occurrences that even caused the movie's witch consultant, Pat Devon, to raise an eyebrow. As the fog rolled in at midnight, the four actresses used actual Wiccan rites and language to invoke powerful forces. Then, as Nancy attempts to invoke the deity Manon, a flock of bats hovered over the set, and the tide rose dramatically, extinguishing the circle of candles. Witchcraft consultant Devon recalls that Manon, a fictitious creation for the film, sounds very close to Manannan, the Gaelic god of the sea. Luckily, we weren't all swept to sea." Director Andrew Fleming is quoted, "Every time the girls started the ceremony, and only when they would start the ceremony, the waves would start coming up tremendously fast, pounding heavily. Then, right when Nancy says, 'Manon, fill me,' right at that exact moment, we lost power. It was a very strange thing."
I'm just imagining, like, Manon, the god of the sea or whatever. It's like, comes running through and it's like, oh, not me. Sorry, I'm my bad. You know, all right, we're just going to have to reel everything back in.
That's a sketch. I'm going to outsource that one to Liz Labass.
Yeah, I don't profess to know what forces rule our lives, which of the faiths is correct. But when you hear a story like that, whoever it is saying, y'all better stop playing.
Exactly, okay? Exactly. Somebody is listening.
Look around and find out.
Right, exactly. That's exactly what that was. And if that were, like, if I had been one of the actors, the story would have been, like, you know, Camila Adams was cast as so-and-so, but after this string of incidents, the craft had to reshoot the entire fucking movie because she was like, deuces, I'm out.
You got scared away like that guy who was in There Will Be Blood and then was like, Daniel Day-Lewis is too scary, bye.
So ends the factsy segment. I'll say this, I want to inject the soundtrack into my veins.
Right?
I still have it on CD.
Every single song on there just puts me in the place where, like, the fleeting moments as a teenager where I felt self-assured are just digitized into that music.
Yes. I think it was probably just less than 10 years ago that I realized that the Beatles were the ones, or actually originally did Tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Did not know that for a long, long time.
And I think it was because of an episode of Mad Men.
I think I found out watching, because I was watching the credits again last night, and I was like, I remember watching the credits of this on VHS because the internet wasn't good enough at the time to just tell me the name of all of these songs.
Right.
And so, like, whatever songs weren't on the soundtrack CD, I was like, well, I need to know what they are. And I think that it was by watching those credits where I saw, like, written by John Lennon and Paul McCartney. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then also the song that's also the Charmed theme song.
How Soon Is Now.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And I always liked the Touch by Heather Nova. I think that was I Have the Touch.
Yes. And I love the Letters to Cleo song. That was like my anthem.
I got to start buying CD, you know, $1 copies of soundtracks.
Yes.
At the exchange, because that's the great failure of Spotify. Any soundtrack you want to listen to on Spotify, there's five songs and the rest are grayed out.
Yeah.
Right.
Because of rights issues. I ended this and I was like, soundtrack for the rest of the week right now, and cannot.
There's like a fan-made playlist of the songs in the movie that are available, but it's not everything you'd want.
I gotta say, those annoy me sometimes, those fan-made ones. It's like, this isn't the right one! Just because you think this goes with it.
Right. When they start subjectively, like, I think this goes with...
Right.
No.
Nope.
It's sad that I hear a $175,000 life insurance payout, and I'm like, that would help for a little while.
Right! That's in my notes as well. It's like, $175,000. So what are you guys going to do for the other two? You guys are good for 2 months. then what?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, that would get me out of debt, but it wouldn't like get me out of debt and buy a house.
Right.
Like it's not, you know,
it's like you're not living a jukebox in your living room lifestyle.
No.
Y'all need to go to the inflation calculator every time you watch anything like I do.
I did.
I was trying. I did.
Okay, so it's like $450,000 now.
But still, though.
I got $295,430.
Really? Because I was trying to, like, think of, like, okay, like, what is... Wait, did you do it for California and did you do it for Pennsylvania?
No, I'm questioning, because I watched something else last night and I remember, oh, I think that... hang on. I also watched Flaming Moe's yesterday, and Moe says that he sells them for $6.95, and I was like, that seems a lot for a cocktail in 1991, and that's $14 now, so I wonder if I was using that multiplication factor. It's $300,000.
The posh California apartment with custom jukebox. I'm like, no.
No.
Literally down the street from where my brother-in-law used to live.
Oh, wow. And I was also wondering, if she had a job... Like, if her mom had a job, then okay, I will give it to them. I will give it to her for being able to do the whole jukebox and brand spanking new moving on up apartment. But just to be like, $175,000. Yeah.
Got to give a shout out to the insurance agent. His performance of nodding and smiling while they freak out about their payday.
Right.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it was very charming. Speaking of
that's going to be a real part of the job, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And speaking of paydays, like Pier 1 and Hot Topic, I'm sure just like made a killing from this movie.
The opening credits are...
Exactly. Because I was Pier 1. I went and got those celestial
candles, etc.
Yes.
No, the opening credits are the in-store television at Hot Topic. Just like, here's an eyeball, here's some mountains, here's some witchy writing, and... It's got a lot of drums. Love it. Is there anything? Okay, I could probably be more objective, but I want to hear first. Is there anything not to? We talked about how, you know, the ending comes at you fast. Is there anything not to like?
I always had a problem with the way that Rochelle dealt or addressed the racism. Like,
talk more about this.
She was a little too, when she confronts her, quote unquote, I was like, why are you doing this to me? And I'm like, bitch, that's the wrong way to go about this. This is like, I understand. I just felt like she was too much. First of all, it's like, of course, the only black girl has to be dealing with racism. That's her big problem. But also just like, you know, it's just a little too, still be my friend kind of like, it's still needy, still wanting to have that good relationship with her. It wasn't like, you know what, man, fuck this bitch, you know, we can throw hands right now if you want to do this. It's just more like, you know, why are you doing this to me? I don't understand. And that's always just kind of set wrong with me. But again, it's like, what is this, 96, and they thought they were doing something by talking about racism in general, so it was just kind of glossing over. We weren't going to get like real deep into it. And I've always, and to this day, I still have a problem with Christine, whatever her name is, because of this role.
Well, that was written into the script after casting. It was written as four white girls, and that character's problem was an eating disorder. She was the one with the eating disorder.
I don't know how to tell them this, that black women have eating disorders too.
Right.
Right.
Oh my God. Now see, that makes it that much worse. And this was written and directed by two grown ass men.
Yeah.
Which I think the premise was like probably built upon, like, one of them's daughter is going through puberty and is like, oh my God, man, it's like she's a witch. I don't understand. And then the craft was born.
Yeah, I have a little bit of a chicken and an egg thing. Like, were teenage girls always trying to be witches? Or is it like, does this movie make more teenage girl witches?
I think it, well, I guess the way to go about that would be to go and take a look into witches in pop culture in general. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, in literature and in movies and in television, because, you know, we always, you know, they watch Bewitched before, and so it's like, right, you know, we've got that generation. There was probably a generation of young girls at that point. I don't know.
Teen Witch, starring Robin Elaine Lively, cousin of Blake Lively.
Oh, really?
That's Blake Lively's cousin?
Wow.
She's front of mind because we're on her part of Twin Peaks right now. So she's front of mind. Blake had no idea.
Twin Peaks? I need to watch this weird.
No, Robin. Oh. Lovely.
I thought you were talking about The Return.
No.
Yeah.
Everyone in the world is in The Return.
That's
but
why
no
it wasn't implausible to me that Blake Lively was in it.
But yeah, I guess we'd have to like look at that and try to see. But it's also probably like, it was much more accessible to try to be a witch, I guess, once the craft came out.
Yeah. Right. Hot topic.
Right.
But wait, rewinding to the racism thing, the thing that never sat right with me, obviously played differently to me as a white girl, but she shouldn't feel bad. That's sort of like when she sees Christine Taylor lose all of her hair, right, and she's kind of like, oh no, what have I done? I'm kind of like,
That's what she had.
Right. That's what felt weird to me.
Yeah.
And then similarly, I don't feel bad for Skeet Ulrich.
No, exactly. Like, fuck that dude.
I do love him in this. I mean, he's so perfectly disgusting. And then when he turns it, and it goes to a sinister place, but when he's like dopey lovesick, it's a side of Skeet we don't get to see.
Right. Yeah. When she at the mass. And he's carrying her books and she tells him to sit and all that stuff. And
yeah.
More than that, I mean, they're all great. I can't get over how good Nev Campbell is in this. She's so credible as a sullen high school girl. I look at her and I see a position of power because Scream is so ingrained in me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But she's, if anything, a little more natural in this kind of like wilting, uncertain, you know, troubled character. She's so good.
Yeah. And she also doesn't do like her normal cadence, like her speech. I guess this came after this movie or she was working against it. But she always has this cadence of kind of pausing a little bit when she talks.
Yes.
And that doesn't happen in this movie. And that's one of the things that always kind of bothers me where she's concerned is like everything else.
She also makes a lot of sentences, questions that aren't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And her head tilt, like her whole body.
Yeah. Yeah. On Party of Five, her character was 100% always speaking in questions.
I never watched. I always forget she was on that. I never watched it.
I doubt it holds up, but I sure loved it.
No, this gets at watching it fairly fresh. Again, I saw it for the first time a few months ago. I love it. The script isn't great. It's a little tacky at some stretches. There's some structural problems. You know, it's not a masterpiece of writing. It's an achievement of mood and tone and acting and being cool. This script gets a little weird. Even Nev's problem with the scars, it's like, you're overstating it a little bit. I mean, those...
Right? It's like, it's on your back.
Your hidden burn scars.
It's on your back.
Your face is fine. The front part of your shoulder, the whole décolletage area. You like, this doesn't need to be a problem for you.
Right. It's like, why are you wearing seven layers?
Watching it last night, I remembered some childhood trauma. I have eczema. And when I was in middle school, it was like really, really bad. And at one point I got like infected eczema and I had to wear bandages on my forearms. Camila, is this you saying you too?
Yes.
Yeah. And spread a rumor that I suicide and
not that bad like, on my end, but
okay, so horrible. That's and awful. I remember relating, like, I knew I was being a little extreme and I felt guilty because like people in the world have real debilitating burn scars, but I was like, I relate to her struggle.
No, that makes sense. Yeah, I used to get eczema too, like in middle school, and it was always like in my the crook of my elbows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like the back of my ears, and yeah, so I totally get it. And I would wear long sleeves a lot.
Yep trauma.
What more can you say about The Craft other than it's a bad idea to steal things from the witch store?
Right.
I love the delivery of I have money.
And just for Nomia reasons, I really appreciated the pun Bitches of Eastwick. Like, yeah. Oh, good. Yeah, we've covered that.
All right.
Anything else to get to before we give it? I think, hey, Seven might be in trouble. We'll find out. But anything else to get to?
I have a whole speech about my rating, which I alluded to earlier, so I can start if that's okay.
Ooh.
So
absolutely.
I was thinking about this, and I was like, obviously, I was obsessed with this movie as a teenager, but I also, you know, I was developing an interest in film and trying to feel like a grown-up by being critical of things. And I 100% said at the time the things that Sean was just saying about, like, it's kind of a weak script and there's some character motivation problems. And so, like, I think at the time, despite thinking that it was the coolest movie ever, I would have been like B minus. Right. But here we are 25 years later, and I watch this movie like once a year. And some of that is nostalgia, but some of it is also just that this movie is enduringly watchable in a way that I think would be true even if you weren't a 12-year-old girl when it came out.
Yeah.
Regardless, my score is 83.
Nice. I thought that's how you said, therefore, 99.
Right. So. Same. I was expecting a little bit more, but a little bit higher.
Yeah, that's higher than mine, but not by a lot. I give it a 75. I mean, this is something that you can watch anytime. Whatever deficiencies it has, you know, are not going to bother you in the moment, certainly.
Right.
Yeah, like despite the fact that I've seen it over 100 times, I'm sure. Despite the fact that I have yet to like make it through a full entire movie in one sitting after 7 p.m. I sat and watched this movie from beginning to end last night, and I was awake for the whole thing. So that's gotta say something. And there was always like a special place in my heart for this movie, as to the point where I crossed over the line, but they were like, once they get their powers, the slow-mo shot of them walking.
That's the coolest thing in school. In the world.
Yes. That's who I wish that I was always cool enough or like, you know, had enough in me to be when I was in high school.
That is for women of our age.
Right.
The Reservoir Dogs opening credits for men of our age.
Exactly. Exactly. I wish I had the confidence of that right there. Sometimes to this day. But anyway, I digress. 89.
Good hearty scores for an average of 82 and a third. Is that higher than 7? We'll do the full rundown of where this lands, as is tradition, next week, but does that end the glorious reign of... No, it doesn't. 7 is still in 7. Oh, 7 is 85 and a third. But still, that again, we'll be flirting with our top 10, and happy to have it.
Nice.
So, to the bingo card. I think we can go ahead and cross off Sean Crush. I think that's
all right. Yeah, you like... yeah, you went through it. At any point in your life, you've managed to...
I mean, I'm giving the square for Nev. Like, I cannot deny
your loves.
Her influence over me for many years in my youth. But yeah, you know, that's shared among the cast.
The heart wants what it wants. There's definitely a taxi. I thought at some point Nancy's mom put her shoe on. Like, I thought there was a point, like, in the apartment, like, she was putting on her house shoes or something.
Why don't we put a tentative mark and we can go check?
Report back if someone puts their shoes on in the craft. And it feels like a movie that had a scene in a library, but it didn't.
I know.
I was waiting for it.
Right.
Yeah.
And not one person on a bicycle, skateboard, or roller skates?
You feel like someone has to have skateboarded by, but right. I can't name it.
I keep confusing Brecken in Clueless.
Yeah.
The skateboard.
He's great.
He
was just in a new episode of Creepshow. Which is having a hell of a season, by the way, and he's still good and funny. He has very distinct comic timing.
Yeah, he's like all those little guys was like him, Giovanni Ribisi, Oz from Buffy,
Seth Green.
yeah,
all the little guys.
Also, Breckenmeyer and I are both born on May 7th. So
nice. Oh, you got you got a birthday coming up.
I do on Friday.
Holy cat weasels. Happy birthday,
Happy
Robin.
Birthday.
Thank you.
Well, so cross off Sean's Crush and Taxi on your bingo card. Possibly puts shoes on. We'll get back to you. We had a lot to say about The Craft, so how about a bit of a lightning round on You Can't Handle the Truth? Robin, what you watching?
The Mitchells versus the Machines on Netflix. Very fun animated movie. Great voice performances. Got me weirdly emotional and highly recommend it.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people are watching it and everyone seems to give it a thumbs up. Camila?
I just watched The Outside Story, which is on VOD right now, with starring Brian Tyree Henry, Sunita Manny, and Sonequa Martin-Green. also known as Sasha from The Walking Dead. It's just, I mean, it's a nice little, like, lighthearted kind of, you know, guy who normally stays inside all day long, explores his neighborhood because he gets locked out of his house accidentally. And he's also going through a breakup. So it's just a nice light thing. And to see Brian Tyree Henry lead the entire film. And yeah, like, it's not necessarily a romantic comedy, but it's cute. And I would.
That's a really cool premise.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, it's really, there's like a scene where like he's locked out without his shoes on. And so he's like with just in his stocking feet and throughout most of it. But then like here, like then the UPS driver comes like, oh, he had ordered shoes. And so so there's a nice little thing there, too. So I would recommend it. It's not great, but it's a delight to spend 2 hours with Brian Tyree Henry always.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
Well, it's usually a great time to spend 2 hours with Michael B. Jordan. I don't know how he got mixed up in dad cinema. He's in,
because it's actually mom cinema now because he's over the 30 mark. And so they're like, you know what? You know who needs him? Moms of a certain age. Sweating and running around and stuff.
Yeah, there's a good cast to Tom Clancy's Without Remorse. But there's, man, is it a nothing, you know? There's a thing and it goes sideways and the Russians are mad and now the Russians are killing people and now we got to track them down. And we did. Like, okay. You know, just every unremarkable, you know, vaguely spy action plot ever. The cast is good, but yeah. I did like things for an end scene. Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I'll minor spoil it to say that, you know, a big part of the inciting incident is the Russians are coming over to get their revenge and they kill his pregnant wife. And it's like, this is the worst cliche in the world for so many reasons.
Oh my God.
The biggest one of which is now every time I watch a movie where someone's pregnant wife and they're happy and they're smiling and cuddly, I'm like, well, she's dead.
Exactly. Uh-oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, why put her in here?
I did like Things Heard and Seen. That is a Netflix spooky time with Amanda Seyfried.
How's that?
A lot of that is just, I love Amanda Seyfried. But it's a nice little, we moved to New England and our house is ghosty and what's going to happen. It doesn't necessarily like add up to all that much, but you know, it's going to rain this weekend. Put on a spooky ghost movie.
I appreciate that.
And this week's new drive-in is the Lynn Auto Drive-In of Strasburg, Ohio. It is the second oldest continuously operating drive-in in the world. I would get a chili dog, and I saw Karate Kid and Labyrinth, and that was fun.
I was very envious of you when I saw that you tweeted that you were watching Karate Kid at the drive-in. It's like, that's where I need to be, because that Karate Kid, any point, any time, yes, at a drive-in, come on, son. Like, that's...
It might have been the circumstances, but like I think I liked it more this time. I mean, that's a lot of fun. But sometimes, as we've discussed, sometimes the 80s movies, you're like, it's fun. It's not good, but it's fun. Right. Karate Kid is, man, you know, when Mr. Miyagi gives him the car and they really connect. Ugh, yeah.
When Mr. Miyagi kicks off in Cobra Kai's ass, that's... Yeah. That is cinema
gold. I like
gold.
When he goes on his date and they have to push the car. That's my favorite scene in The Karate Kid.
Hi, Huskies. Hi.
I'll ask this. I know I'm trying to wrap it up and now I'm saying more things. Here's my question. Labyrinth or Neverending Story?
Neverending Story all day and all night. I hate Labyrinth. I don't want any part of Labyrinth.
I would say Neverending Story just because that's the only one I've seen. Like, I've seen enough of Labyrinth to know that I also don't really want any parts of Labyrinth.
Now that somehow, without really trying, I've seen both of them multiple times as an adult, I don't get how anyone is like, man, Labyrinth is so... No, it's not bad.
They're attracted to David Bowie.
Yeah, it's not bad because the music is great, there are creative Muppets, and it's goofy and weird, but it's like... Neverending Story, that absolutely is a film. And Labyrinth is like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, no, I still get a little choked up when I see the picture of the thing on the little boy on the thing riding whatever way. I've only seen it a couple times, but
I watched that movie like that was one of my I'll watch it every second day movie when I was a kid.
Oh.
And if you're out there saying, but what about Dark Crystal? You can leave. You can just no. And Legend, don't get me started on any.
Oh no, that's never been on my radar.
Both Legend and Dark Crystal are movies I know I've seen but have no memory of.
No thank you.
I can't believe that Dark Crystal got a Netflix series of all of the... Anyway, let's draw a movie. This is just regular old drawing a movie. There's nothing special. It's what we do.
We have a three key turn veto in play only.
That's right. 96. Will we use it on Rango, the Johnny Depp animated film from 2011?
Academy Award winner.
For what?
Best animated feature.
Oh, geez.
That's a best animated feature?
I know.
Feature?
It must have been a light year. I've never seen it.
Is it free?
The eternal question. I know I saw it. It's got, you know, it's weird. I like that it's weird.
And Johnny Depp uses a voice, so you might be able to get past the depth of it all.
The depth of it all. I'm not sure.
It's on Netflix. Mm. How short is it? Yeah. It's an hour and 47 minutes.
No.
That seems too long.
No.
We haven't purely drawn a movie in a while. I want to draw another movie. I'm willing to take the risk.
I'm okay with that, too.
All right. I'm happy to turn my key along with y'all as a fuck you to Johnny Depp.
Yeah, there we go.
That's
watch
the spirit.
It land on even Johnny Depp.
I know, right?
There are a lot of them.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Instead of Rango, now that no more of these, no more vetoes, and we're stuck watching Hero. You remember, it's a martial arts thing from 2004.
Oh, that was no, that's not the one I'm thinking of. Never mind. I'm thinking of Crouching Tiger.
This kind of came in the wake of, I remember loving this movie. I don't know
if Jet Li out
of college. Yes, it's Jet Li.
Okay. I think I also really liked this movie.
I know I saw it. It's on HBO.
Great.
Oh, this is the one.
That was a successful veto, guys.
Yeah, this is the one. And it's only an hour and a half.
We traded up.
Yeah. I think this is what I'm thinking of, that it being really beautiful, just cinematically.
Yes.
Gorgeous.
And then he did Zhang Yimou, the Chinese director, did this, and then House of Flying Daggers. I was really into them at that. I mean, I was in college and into movies, so it was this was an easy win. The thing I remember most about this movie was the commercials were all said Quentin Tarantino presents,
because
he had like some kind of a production credit. And was, you know, instrumental in it getting, it's a number one movie in America. Like, he was instrumental in it getting wide distribution. And so a lot of people were like, this isn't the best of the Tarantino movies. And I'm like, you don't understand what the words in commercials mean.
Oh my God. Stop.
That's actually going on right now with the Mitchells versus the Machines. All the ads are like, from the creators of the Lego Movie and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And it's like, okay, they have producer credits. Right.
Well, no, I'm. That is a successful veto. I'm pumped to watch it, and I'm very curious to see, you know, having not watched those since I in the theater more than 15 years ago,
right,
what they're looking like now. So we'll be back with that in before we leave. The Craft was released May 3rd of 1996. What was the number one song in America?
Is this when the Macarena was happening?
Close, but no. It was
Mambo Number 5. Was this around that time?
Too early for the ascendance of Lou Bega.
Spice Girls.
Mariah Carey, because it's the 90s?
Correct. Which one?
Fantasy?
One Sweet Day?
No. You split it there. One Sweet Day is later. Fantasy is earlier.
What is that?
Always Be My Baby.
Correct. It's Always Be My Baby. Which is, hey, no complaints about that song. I wished it was something that would have been on the Craft soundtrack. Feel like that's not an ending line.
No.
Where was Robin Tunney moving into? What like abandoned 50s community center did your family buy and turn into a house?
I was also like questioning, like, did people live in that for real?
It's someplace that nobody will mind if you import 10,000 snakes.
I had a minute of, is he a gardener? Is he just their snake guy? Do you have to get a snake guy in California?